Have you been stressed, anxious, or worried? Have you felt pangs of loneliness in recent times? Are you longing for greater connection with others in the world around you? In a phrase, are you looking for happiness? You are not alone. Millions of others are seeking this feeling of spiritual, mental, and physical wellness too. This podcast explores the underlying causes of unhappiness and shares with us the secrets of rewriting the frequent thoughts and redirecting the common behaviors that keep us in that state. Join forensic psychologist and best-selling author Dr. Nihal and her guests as they dive deep in the realm of psychological wellness and explore ways of finding happiness on demand.
Hi everyone, it's Joan Nihal welcoming you to our podcast. And today we're going to talk about friendship and how of friendship. How do you navigate friendship in such uncertain times? And I say, never underestimate the power of friendship. It's the best investment we can make. I really mean that. Research indicates that happy people develop strong interpersonal relationships. They have close friends. Look, friendship is a vibrant, living, shared experience between people. It results in increased longevity, reduced risk of cardiovascular disease, enhanced mental health, and an increased immune system. How good is that? Did you know that loneliness has become an epidemic? Why? It's because of hyperconnectivity. Modern loneliness appears as hyperconnectivity. You might have thousands of followers, millions of friends online, but when you find yourself in need of a ride or in the face of a health crisis, there's no one there to help you out. Did you know that according to a study from the American Enterprise Institute's Survey Center on American Life, that men are on the brink of a friendship recession? Yes, I call it a friendship recession, and that's what men are on the brink of. Because between 1990 and 2021, the percentage of men with at least 6 male friends dropped by half. This can literally kill us. There's a well-established correlation between friendlessness, or what we call loneliness, and a reduction in mental and physical well-being. A 2015 Brigham Young University survey found that loneliness can shorten life expectancy by up to 30%. The National Institute of Health has linked loneliness to dementia and cardiovascular disease. And recent studies have found a link between loneliness and suicide in men. Now more than ever, young adults as well find it difficult to form friends because of hyperconnectivity. They use screen time to connect with others. But this type of friendship is artificial, it's not real. Real friendship requires reciprocity, a give and take, a shared experience with others, not just when we're happy, but also when we're crying, when we're sad, in the dumps, going down that rabbit hole. It involves another person showing up for us, no matter what, and watching our back. So it must have physical contact, not just online connection. It has a life of its own. The reciprocity in friendship is interesting because while we can love someone who doesn't love us back, we can't have a friendship with someone who doesn't want to be our friend. Think about that. When you think about your friendships, how did they happen? Chance? Work, social gatherings. You know, with some people it's easy to connect and with others it's hard. When I was a young child, I knew my parents' friends. I also knew my friends' parents. We could hang out in each other's homes. We had house parties, fairs, different ways to foster connection. When I moved to Canada, it was very different. People would ask me, "Where are you from?" Can we really connect with people who don't have our history, our culture, our life experiences? People who ask me where I'm from are drawn towards me because I'm different. I'm a foreigner, a curiosity. We might not be able to share the same background, but we do have common experiences of transition, of loss, of deliberately uprooting ourselves to a different state or province, or to a different culture or country. Developing friendships can buffer situational loneliness. And this brings me to the question, how do we make new friends in such a different environment? Look, I think we're all strangers to a certain extent. When we meet for the first time over a glass of wine at a cocktail party, a cup of tea, we're strangers, aren't we? But not for long. A story comes to mind of a client who said to me recently, "How could I possibly be of interest to other people when I've just had a difficult divorce?" She said this tearfully. Yet another woman who had become recently widowed said, "I feel like a third wheel, Joan. People are staying away from me, especially my female married friends. And this makes me feel so sad. I'm not going after someone's husband, you know." And yet another said to me, "What do I have to offer? Or will I come across as too needy or too pushy? And which parts of myself do I need to share, or do I want to share? I don't want to dominate a conversation. It's really about uncharted waters and not wanting to take that deep dive and be vulnerable and hurt." Some of these questions my clients ask me are relevant to all of us, including myself. In a new environment, when we're thrust into a new situation, for example, a new experience, a health crisis, suddenly we need to turn to help. And how do we need to turn to someone for help. But how do we do it? How do we navigate these choppy waters and retain a semblance of normalcy? I think these words, these situations can be summarized in one word. What is it? Insecurity. I feel insecure, I feel vulnerable, I feel fragile when I have to stick my neck out and meet with people for the first time. And here is where I'd invite us to use our imagination. I say to my clients, and I say to you, my listeners, that think if your friend were describing you, how would they describe you? As empathic, understanding, loving, caring, non-judgmental, supportive, honest. Now show up as that person and notice the difference. Make those adjectives into a verb. Do caring, do non-judgmental, and so on. Notice the how of friendship involves activation of the imagination, activation of curiosity, like a little child in a toy shop, wondering what toy do I get today? Or when we play dress up and make believe when we were very, very young. Do you remember? And we said, okay, this is who I'm going to be. Now, I want you to be that child and grab some of those adjectives that our friends described us as, make them into verbs, and do that in your next social gathering. I promise you, you'll see a huge difference in your confidence and in other people's responses to you. So, the question is, what do I ask when I meet people for the first time? Here's a good conversation starter. Ask the person the following. Tell me a little bit about yourself, but not about what you do or did for work. And tell me, if you had the opportunity to do a different job, to embrace a new profession, what would it be? Pause right now in the podcast and answer that question. I think it's a very important one. These are interesting conversation starters because the person will listen and open up, use their imagination, and be more personal with you. And it ultimately, it's so much more interesting. I'm not saying that we have to have a compendium of arsenal of questions with which to engage in social encounters. But I am encouraging us, including myself, to be ourselves. Use some humor, be vulnerable, laugh a bit. And maybe the connection will happen when someone says something to you. You can say, oh yeah, that reminds me of when you said X, that reminds me of what I did in Y situation. Because connection is important in a friendship, correct? We need to feel that we have commonalities, hobbies, interests, and so on. So I talked about curiosity and I'm talking about imagination and I'm saying dress up, be a child again. Psychological research on the liking app shows that people tend to underestimate how liked they are when they interact with strangers. Those suffering from anxiety and depression might assume that they're unliked. People don't like them. When told to assume that people will like them, they are warmer and friendlier. Stinson and others call this the acceptance prophecy. And I think we need to hold on to the acceptance prophecy because it will help us. Companionship, we talked about similarity in hobbies and so on. But we also need to share our vulnerabilities because that leads to emotional closeness. And that is the fertilizer, the breeding ground for a real friendship, a real connection, what I started talking about, disconnect. Let's connect. Look, like a muscle, you've got to train it. You can't just exercise once a week to be fit. I wish, don't you? Likewise, in a friendship, you've got to spend time investing in the relationship. It takes time, effort, consistency, and perhaps a reduction in the use of screen time. My husband had two hips and a right knee replaced 2 years ago. 6 weeks ago, he fell on some steps and landed on his right side on hard slate. He fractured his hip badly. I was out of the country at the time when he called. He was all alone in our home. How do I ask for help? We had recently moved to a new neighborhood and started to develop friendships. I called a new friend and asked her to go to my home when the ambulance arrived. She offered to rescue Zeus, our two-year-old labradoodle. She took him for what she called a piddle, even though she had a lot to do at that point and in fact was dealing with her own health issues, which were serious. I was deeply touched. Yet another neighbor, whom she called, volunteered to take Zeus overnight, to have a sleepover, she laughingly said, while I flew back to Canada. This is what I'm talking about when I talk about vulnerability. I felt totally vulnerable. Defenseless, raw inside with pain, and I didn't know what to do next. I'd lost my compass. People rallied around me to give me support during what was a very difficult time as my husband waited day after day for a week before the necessary surgery took place. I learned through this experience the value of friendship, the value of reciprocity, the ability to laugh, to share joy, to share pain, to share the feelings of being totally unglued. How many of you have had experiences like this one. I bet you have. Because we're all giving souls. We have no problems giving, and yet we have a difficult time asking for help, let alone receiving it. I'm humbled as I share this story with you. And I invite you to learn from it about the value of friendships and that we reap what we sow. A friend said to me, "But Joan, you did this for me, don't you remember?" I didn't. Another said, "I learned how to be a friend through watching you when you built a new community around us." Now, you might be saying to me, "This is all great, but how do I create these friendships when I shop from home for groceries, I work from home, I do everything from home and online?" Why not limit our screen time? Get out of your home, appreciate nature. Experience awe, what Dasha Kelter calls awe. Smile at passersby. Start talking to people. Take the risk to say, "Hi, how's it going?" And from that, you might be pleasantly surprised at what evolves from an acquaintance to a blossoming friendship that is a living, vibrant organism. Volunteer your services. Connection is the antidote to loneliness. And friendship is the best investment we can make. The quality of our lives is determined by the quality of our relationships, wouldn't you agree? And sometimes we need to cull our friendships, we need to prune them, we need to weed them out in the springtime and reassess our friendships. And that's okay too. But we need to be active. It's a vibrant living organism. Research across the world shows that satisfying social connections is one of the most reliable predictors of having a long, healthy, and happy life. In my case, having close friends and a support network help me buffer the curveballs that life throws my way. It protects all of us against the negative outcomes we might otherwise focus on exclusively.
We hope you're finding this presentation on friendship helpful. In the following segment, Dr. Nihal and Ellen Edwards further explore this topic of friendship. Enjoy.
Hi, Alan. Welcome back. So I thought you might want to address the issue of friendship with me. And if you've got some questions, feel free.
Well, yeah, I've listened to your podcast so far, and I found it really interesting. One of the things that struck me of what you said was that you can love somebody who doesn't love you back, but you can't force friendship. Can you elaborate on that?
Yes, it's a good point, you know, because you could love someone in a heterosexual or same-sex relationship or whichever variation you want, and you could really love that person. The person doesn't love you back. Whereas in a friendship, I'm thinking if you were in a primary relationship already with a person, you just have to accommodate to the fact that the person doesn't love you back or doesn't love you to the same extent that you feel or experience loving that person. So it's like a bit unrequited, but not completely. And you're already in the relationship, so you want to make the best of it. Now, in a friendship, however, there's a difference there because you can be with someone, you want that person to be your friend, but the person will distance and decide on their own to ghost you or to be unavailable or to do a variety of different things or behaviors so that you understand at some point that they really are not interested in a relationship with you, a friendship that is. So there's a big difference there in the two.
In this era of social media contacts where people can friend other people, people can keep in touch through social channels, and yet you say there's an epidemic of loneliness. Is that in part resulting in lack of positive friendships that mean something meaningful?
I really like that question that you're asking because it goes to the core of what we're talking about when we talk about friendship, and later on when we get into loneliness. I think that people are so in tune with their devices that they've forgotten the art of friendship. Friendship is a living organism. It's something that we interact actively with another person. It has a life of its own. Whereas if you're on the internet or you've got someone online, there is the lack of physical contact. There is the artificiality endemic to that relationship. And in fact, that won't be someone that you can say, well, he or she's going to watch my back or look out for me, or, oh, I need to go to the hospital. Can I call that person? Now, look, if it's your friend that you have a vital relationship with, yes. But if it's someone on the internet, and you might tell me, well, Joan, I've got thousands of friends on the internet. Can you really, I ask you, ask one of them to come drop everything at the drop of a hat and come and pick me up and take me to the hospital? And I'm afraid the answer might be no.
Can you define friend?
A friend is someone who with whom you have commonality. They say that your friends reflect to a certain extent to you. I would beg to disagree. I think in a friendship, a friend or friends reflect different aspects of your personality. So, for example, you like finishing cars, refinishing really beautiful antique objects. You might have friends who are in that area of expertise with you, but that's only part of you. You might have other friends with whom you go fishing. You have other friends that you go hiking with. Do you see what I'm saying? That we have many interests, and as we have interests, we have friends, and there's a common point of convergence. Now, look, you can also have a friend with because you belong to a certain group of people, and so they become your friends. Say, for example, a book club, a bridge club, a mahjong club. Okay, so that's one type of friendship. But I would say to define a friend is someone with whom I share common interests, basic core values are the same. For example, not hurting someone deliberately or whatever your core values are, how you spend money. You will find that your friends invariably will reflect that back to you. I'm thinking at the University of Alberta, for example, the Faculty Women's Club, they had a variety of different pods that people could join. For example, there was couples who love to cook, and so people would get together in different people's homes, people who want to read, and so on and so forth. So you have to have common interest. Now, here's the issue. How long does it take to call a person a friend?
Good question. Yeah, I mean, I'm guessing it would take a matter of months or in some cases years to build up that relationship. So this is somebody that you can totally trust, you could call upon at your worst hour. That to me is a real friend.
Yes, exactly what I was talking about. I agree with you completely. How long does it take? For some people, they tell me it could take a couple of decades because we're so busy and so multifaceted, it takes longer to get to know someone. And for some people, it could be a meeting of minds and they get together in a matter of weeks. I feel I've known you all my life. I'm sure you've experienced that yourself. I have. So the time variable is not as important as the connectivity, the ability to connect with another person and feel this is a reflection of a part of me.
Is there chemistry between people? I've met people that I spent some time with, and I thought to myself, I really like this person. I really like being around this person. And then the friendships have developed. I mean, in some cases, they haven't, but that's kind of the initial feeling. I remember working with a fellow feature writer on the newspaper years ago. His name was Mike Pollock, and he was just a great guy. And I really, really enjoyed being around him at work, and he invited me to a dinner, and a great friendship developed. And so I'm looking back on that kind of reaction to somebody else.
Yes, because when you meet with someone, the spark can occur automatically. And then you want to spend more time. You want to invest in the relationship, as people tell me today. They're investing in it as though they were investing in money or something else. So you, yes, when you meet someone and you feel the spark is there, yes, you will spend more time actively seeking out opportunities to be with that person. That's definitely so. Now, if you enjoyed this podcast and you learned from it, or you found it useful, please share it with others. And if you have any questions, I'd love to take them up on my personal email, joan@nehal.com. Bye now.
Thank you for joining this discussion on happiness. We hope this helps to inspire you to lead a more joyful life. To dive deeper into the subject of happiness, be sure to check out Dr. Nehal's book, Happy is the New Healthy, available as an ebook or hardcover. For additional resources, visit our website at drnehal.com. Until next time, stay happy.